Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
In. So we're waiting to see what. It looks like Skype has me back up again. Hi, boy, I love having these little difficulties here. Let me get that one turned off and this one back on. Fun and games. You never, ever know what's going to happen thanks to BTR. Guys, you're doing such a swell job out there, really. Again, I wanted to start saying hello to everyone in the chat room. We've got Joe Goldner, who ran against Debbie Washman Schultz in Florida, Bigfoot, Anna, and Vito Esposito, Mamma Mia, No Sharia. We've got a great guest today. He's a friend of mine I've known for years past, Mike Cutler, former INS agent. Let me get that all straight. And he'll be joining us at quarter after the hour. And as I wait for my co-host to call in, I want to tell you we've got a lot of great things lined up later on this week. Friday's episode is going to be a Second Amendment rights, and I'm waiting to hear back from the agent for Chuck Woolery. I spoke to his office just this afternoon to confirm whether or not he'll be able to join us on Friday. And we're going to have a lot of fun going on to that. Those who listen to us know that we start off each show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going to go to a DEA agent. And since I do not have any sort of a music for DEA, we're just going to use the Eternal Father hymn. And today's dedication goes out to Special Agent Terry Watson, who was murdered on June the 21st of last year in an alleged robbery attempt in Bogota, Colombia. And this is from Fox News Latino. As his wife and family mourned his death, the investigation into the brutal killing of a U.S. DEA agent in Colombia continues to unfold following the arrest of six men linked to the murder. Special Agent James Terry Watson was stabbed to death inside a cab after he walked out of a restaurant. The cab was cut off by another cab carrying Watson's killers, according to investigators. Metropolitan Bogota Police Commander Luis Eduardo Martinez said officials still believe the killing came during a robbery and was not related to work done by the 43-year-old Watson. He said the group apparently had carried out similar robberies using taxis. Yet owners of both taxi companies involved in Watson killings claimed they had no knowledge that their drivers were working in cahoots with assassins. Both Jose Vicente Ramos, the cabbie Wilson hailed, and Asdrubal Walter Pendreza, owner of the car his attackers were riding in, said they were unaware that their drivers were involved in the night's homicide, the Colombian newspaper El Tiempo reported. On Saturday, my driver didn't show up to hand in his earnings, didn't answer his phone, and we couldn't find him anywhere, Ramos told El Tiempo. Watson, a 13-year DEA veteran, was killed after being dragged out of a taxi on his way home from Bogota restaurant late last Thursday night after watching the NBA Finals game. In what both U.S. and Colombian authorities initially called a botched robbery, Watson was stabbed three times in the chest and once in the leg. He was pronounced dead after arrival at a local clinic. Colombia authorities announced that they had detained four suspects in Watson's murder. Two were arrested in Bogota, one in the neighboring Tolima, and another in the city of Vallecino. The Drug Enforcement Administration is grateful for the outstanding work of the Colombia National Police, said the Special Investigative Unit and the Attorney General's Office, that led to the swift arrest of these suspects. We will never forget Special Agent Watson and his sacrifice, as well as all those who have given their lives for the rule of law. We salute the brave and expeditious work of the Colombian law enforcement, and we look forward to justice being served. Watson's body was flown back to Louisiana, where the state police and the state wildlife and fisheries honor guards escorted his body. A service took place in Rayville High School. Watson is survived by his wife, Afadia, a native of the Colombian city of Cartagena, where she is from a wealthy family. The two had recently married before Watson was transferred to Bogota for temporary duty. She is devastated and no one comforts her, a source close to her family told El Tiempo. Watson's widow returned to the U.S. for family services. And this is from CNN. A Virginia grand jury indicted six Colombian nationals for the kidnapping and murder of a Drug Enforcement Administration agent in a South American country during an attempted robbery. Special Agent James Terry Watson died after being stabbed in a taxi in Bogota, Colombia. He was assigned to the DEA unit in Cartagena and was on temporary duty in Bogota. The six defendants operated a robbery and kidnapping conspiracy using cabs in Bogota to lure victims, and the driver of the cab would signal to conspirators to commence the abduction and robbery. Watson was allegedly shot with a stun gun by one defendant and stabbed with a knife by another. Watson had been watching the last NBA game in the finals at a Bogota restaurant on the night and left in his taxi. Investigators believed Watson's cab stopped at a traffic light, and his assailants jumped out of two other cabs, which pulled up in either side of the vehicle in which he was riding. According to officials, Watson managed to escape the cab and was taken to a hospital where he died. In Colombia, these attacks are known as millionaire rides. Authorities said the suspects they arrested were part of a gang known for millionaire ride robberies. The DEA said Watson was a 13-year veteran of the agency. He had been sent to Afghanistan three times on counter-narcotics trafficking assignments and previously served in the Army and worked for the U.S. Marshals Service. The indictment sends an unmistakable message to all who commit acts of violence against America's law enforcement professionals. No matter who you are or where you live, we will do everything in our power to hold you accountable to the fullest extent of the law, said U.S. Attorney Eric Holder. Each of them was charged with two counts of second-degree murder, one count of kidnapping, and one count of conspiracy to kidnap. One was charged with two counts of assault. The federal jury in Virginia also indicted another conspirator, a Columbia national, for his allegedly trying to destroy evidence in Watson's murder. Doing an investigation on the internet, these men have been indicted, but to date, I could not find any indication that they were ever brought to the United States for trial. Eric Holder's office may not have come through with his promise to bring these men to justice. So we dedicate this show to Agent Watson. We dedicate it to all the brave men and women who have served, who are serving, and will serve. We can never say thank you enough for their sacrifices. We dedicate this song by Todd Taylor Harrison. My name is Harrison.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the fire. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name, I cannot be broken, I
Hi, Todd Allen Herending. My name is America. Wanted to welcome everyone back to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Also up on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, and TeaPartyCommunity.com, as well as Patriot Radio Network. And we're still waiting for my co-host to get back to his computer and sign in, so hopefully Cool Mike will be joining us very shortly. But we've got an exciting guest, someone that I never am bored speaking with. So good afternoon and welcome aboard, Mike Cutler.
Annie, how are you? Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you. And long time no speak, like less than 24 hours?
Less than 24 hours. It's really great joining you. It's great to be able to cover the subjects that the mainstream media won't go near. I mean, it's astonishing what we're really witnessing today. You know, let me start out by putting out two websites, and I'll put them out, you know, towards the end also. But just for those of you that want to read more about what we'll be discussing today, I have a website, Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I also write for a great organization, Californians for Population Stabilization. They have a wonderful website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org, where I join a bunch of other writers, experts in their field, talking about the impact of our non-secured borders, not only on California, but the whole country. And, you know, they've been beating the drum on two issues that really are at the heart of the issue. Number one, the crisis that we're now seeing on the southwest border, which I believe was a manufactured crisis by this administration, aided and abetted, I might add, by many politicians from both sides of the aisle. Anybody who simply says we have to secure that southern border and ignore all the other broken and missing components of the immigration system, encouraging people by telling them that they want to provide them with pathways to either citizenship or at the very least lawful status. As I said when I went before Congress, it's kind of like firing the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens from around the world where the finish line is the United States border. So they've been writing about that. They've also been writing about the impact on American workers. My starting question with you, Annie, I know it's your show, forgive me for doing it bass-ackwards, but what do you make of a 6.3% unemployment rate where they blithely ignore over 100 million unemployed American workers who are of working age? What does that tell you about the honesty and integrity of our whole government? Isn't that a good barometer for a starting point about the BS that passes for the news and honesty and transparency?
Well, you know what it is, Mike? You know, they started off in education and putting all this together have actually gone through Common Core, and that's how they're coming up with these figures.
Well, it might be Common Core. I don't know that it's Common Core. I just think that they've hired the people from Pravda, Izvestia, and maybe Bernie Madoff is working on their statistics. Hang on.
Oh, man. I did not lose you, did I, Mike?
No, I heard you crackling a little bit there, but now you're okay. I think you had a rough connection there, maybe.
Yeah, well, Blog Talk Radio is acting up today. Within the first 2 minutes of talking on the air, they've already kicked me off. So thank God I had a backup microphone system set up. Otherwise, I would not be here right now.
Oh, boy, that's not a good thing, because I've been looking forward to being on your show.
Oh, man. The audience doesn't really know about you and I. It happened that we had known each other during the 80s without actually knowing that we knew each other. We would
cross paths.
And I knew of you. I knew your voice. I knew what you looked like and everything else. And we ran into each other at a Tea Party convention. I believe it was the first one four and a half years ago.
I spoke right after Newt Gingrich. I couldn't believe they honored me with that prized speaking slot right after Santorum and Gingrich spoke. They gave me the opportunity to speak for 25 minutes at that convention, but that's right.
Yeah, but I heard you talking to someone else in the audience and just listening to your voice, and I was looking at you, and I go, I know this man. I know this man. I know this man. So I finally turned around to my husband and said, excuse me, I'll be right back. And I walked over and I introduced myself, and you recognized me, and I recognized you, and
yep. Here
we were. That was, oh, geez. We knew each other in the mid-late 80s, and that's how many years ago? 30-some-odd years ago?
Yeah, well, that was because you were a New York City police officer. I was assigned to the Drug Task Force as an immigration agent. You know, I spent half my 30-year career with the Drug Task Force, 4 years but the Unified Intelligence Division at DEA in New York City. I was actually the first immigration agent assigned to the Intelligence Division of DEA, and then I got promoted to Senior Special Agent in 91, and I was part of the OSIDEF program, Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. But prior to that, I did a lot of work with members of the New York City Police Department. A lot of what I did was up in Crown Heights, but we certainly were up in the Bronx and Harlem, a lot of the tough neighborhoods, because there's a nexus between drug trafficking, illegal aliens, and crime. And that's a nexus that never gets discussed. You know, it's funny. In New York, they've enacted something known as the SAFE Act. And it reminds me of Marathon Man, you know, that film, Are We Safe? So they think the solution to gun violence is to allow gun owners to only put 7 rounds in a 10-round magazine, even if the gun was designed for a 13-round magazine or whatever. It's kind of silly, but you have members of Congress and you have a vice president who obviously knows nothing about firearms, but they're willing to share their abundance of stupidity and foolishness with the world and eliminate any doubt that they may really know what they're talking about. You know, and I'm a Democrat, by the way, folks. This has nothing to do with partisan politics. It's just I have no tolerance for stupid. And when Joe Biden, the court jester, if you will, I don't know any other way to describe that guy with that big laugh of his, the court jester seems to be about the right character that he portrays every day. You know, when you watch Biden at a news conference, it's like watching a shock jock like Howard Stern. You know, people watch in some cases just out of curiosity of what in the world is he going to say next. And with Joe Biden, you don't have to wait long. And it's always, you know, I'm serious.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
My goodness gracious, isn't it? Do you remember when Biden got out there and they were talking about guns and he said to his wife, honey, take that double-barrel shotgun. If you hear a sound out there, let a couple of rounds go and that'll solve the problem. Well, first of all, it's illegal to fire warning shots. Number two, it's crazy to fire when you don't even know if it may be your kid coming home late from a date and lost his keys. And by the way, if you miss and it is a bad guy, you've just turned a firearm into a club because all that a double-barrel shotgun holds is 2 rounds. You fire a couple of rounds, you now have an expensive club. You know, so when you hear, am I right or wrong, Annie?
I'm just picturing, I have this all pictured in my mind. Now, what they also failed to realize is what goes up must come down. And when that comes down, it's going to come down at a higher velocity, and people have been killed by that.
Yes, they have. And so you've got that going on. Then you have one of our geniuses in the U.S. Senate saying, well, if we could get rid of those extended magazines, once they're used up, they'll be off the street. So I guess when you empty the gas tank on your car, you have the car towed to the scrap heap?
I want to welcome my co-host on Cool Mike. It's great to have you finally on, Mike.
I keep muting the phone because I'm trying not to laugh. Oh, man.
Am I bad today or am I bad today? Hi, Mike.
You know what? I'll tell you. New Yorkers, I've learned, being from Michigan, doing the show with Annie, and when other New Yorkers join, New Yorkers are New Yorkers. Doesn't matter what party or whatever. Don't bother to ask them what's on there. They're going to tell it to you. But I agree.
Damn right.
I think
damn right.
Joe Biden also said when he made that statement about the wife and the rounds, I believe he was debating, whoever he was debating even made the comment, wait a minute, you're telling me we got to spend money in order to not go bankrupt? Boy, how things change when all of a sudden you become a running mate, huh?
Well, you know, the world has gone nuts, and it's the wacky world of politics. George Orwell had a wonderful quote. I don't have it in front of me. I wish I did. But it was to the effect, and Orwell's one of my favorites, but it was to the effect that political speech can make murder sound moral and make wind appear to have solidity. And boy, we get a lot of hot air wind coming out of Washington and our political supposed leaders. But, you know, it's just so astonishing that you have people that write the laws who don't know what in the world they're talking about. Now we've got in New York, see, my dad, may rest in peace, used to say to me, you know, Mike, nothing is so good it couldn't get better or be so bad that it couldn't get worse. Mayor Bloomberg was a disaster. He was the guy who screamed that the cops weren't arresting trespassers in the public housing up in the Bronx. But then, of course, when you trespassed on America, he wanted to give you the key to the city. Bloomberg is the same guy who would talk about salt and sugar in the diet and all the dangers of the big gulp drink. Oh, my God. You can almost see a horror movie, put, you know, arms and legs on a big gulp drink coming down the block and everybody running for cover. But he wouldn't talk about the dangers of heroin or cocaine. I'll admit that I put 3 teaspoons of sugar in my coffee. I don't think that's quite as much of a risk to my health as the person that either shoots up heroin or snorts cocaine, that you never heard a word out of his mouth about the drugs. And most recently, and this totally blew my mind, he had a cocktail party, at the basically mausoleum at Ground Zero. Boy, I can't imagine a more joyous place to have a party. What in the world is in this guy? I'm convinced that Bloomberg flunks the Wiggle test. Do you guys know what the Wiggle test is?
No, but you'll tell us.
I'm about to tell you, that's right. You stick your left finger in your left ear. You stick your right finger in your right ear. You wiggle your fingertips. If they touch, you flunk the test.
Hey, listen,
you know,
Mike.
Bloomberg had a huge fundraiser for our rhino, Republican Governor Rick Snyder. He was part of that, and it was like $1,000 to even get in or something like that. Quick question, Mike. How come, from what we've been talking about, basically, I've been able to listen to the show. I just hadn't been able
Maybe there's a reason for what Bloomberg did. Maybe he thought it was really a fundraiser for the Central Park Zoo. He heard the word rhino and figured, oh, this must be about the zoo. Keep going. I'm listening to you.
A lot of this stuff, say 20 years ago, even suggesting some of the stuff these politicians say or suggest, I mean, they would have been, posses would have put a rope around that. Now it's just like, yeah, okay, great, let's do it. What the hell's happened?
Well, it's both political parties. You know, there was an interesting study done by Princeton University and a couple of other elite schools that said we're no longer living in a republic, but we're now living in an oligarchy, and we are. And if you look at the Supreme Court decisions, and I know my friends who worry about the First Amendment say, well, you know, you can't limit campaign contributions, it's a form of expression, because I've made the suggestion numerous times that I'd like to see a law passed, and I don't care what they say, by the way, I have a very strong opinion, you should not be allowed to contribute money to the two candidates running for the same office. If you're contributing to a campaign, the presumption is you're contributing because you want the guy to win or the gal to win. When you're giving money to the two people running for the same office, you're really saying you want to make sure that you win. So they're getting the best government money can buy. And the average American is an idiot. You know, we have, instead of adults in America today, we have children wearing suits. And I'll give you a great example. When the new iPhone comes out, whatever time it will be, whenever it happens, you will see a bunch of people waiting in line, maybe for 3 days, no shower, no real food, God knows where they're going to the bathroom, waiting online for the newest version of the iPhone. They're waiting for their toys. This is what we've turned our adults into. You look at the news programs, it's a 3-minute food fight. Do you really learn anything when you watch those food fights? I've done between 300 and 400 television interviews. And some of the programs are very good, and some of them it's an honest-to-God conversation. I just did an interview yesterday with Graham Ledger over at One American News Network. They're an upstart. I think they're on the right track. It was an actual interview. I did it by Skype from home. I did one with a gal that was filling in for him on Friday. It ran about 6 or 7 minutes, and it was just a straight-on interview. When I've been on with Megyn Kelly, it's a straight-on interview. But how many times do you see these programs where they have one guy against another guy? By the time the host gets done speaking, or the anchor, and by the time they get through whatever, you're lucky if you get 3 sentences in, and there's nothing in the way of real knowledge being conveyed, and they go from one story to the next story without rhyme or reason as to what stories are most important. So you could be talking about national security, followed by the story about somebody who baked a cake without flour, followed by a guy who's selling a new kind of a garden hose, and then we're back to a cure for cancer. So, you know, you're sitting there, and it's like being on the merry-go-round that's whipping around at ever-increasing speed. There's no depth to the conversation, very little knowledge to be gleaned, More people are involved with Twitter, where you get to bark and chirp at each other rather than have honest-to-God conversations. I think that all of this is leading to brain rot, if you will, on the part of most Americans. What do you think?
I think you said a mouthful, and I agree with you completely. You know, it's funny because whenever I talk to you, it's always so much fun because I swear that you are a conservative, even though you say you're a registered Democrat, but we'll forgive you for that. You know, everyone has to have one of them in their family.
Well, thank you. I'm the token in my – no, but look, I'm pro-choice, and I know we could have this argument on another day, but here's something that's very important, Annie, and Mike, I think you're going to agree with me. Another thing that never used to be the way it is today, talk about the good old days, is Democrats and Republicans never saw each other as enemies. We have gotten so polarized in America because people know that things are terribly wrong. Most people don't realize what's wrong or why it's wrong or how to fix it, but they know it's wrong. And it's easy to play the scapegoat game, and both parties blame the other. Do you know the biggest ally the U.S. military used to have? The Russian military, and vice versa. Because the leaders of the U.S. military would go to Congress and say, we need more money because the Russians just built a new bomber. And the Russians would go to their Politburo and say, we need more money because the Americans just built a new intercontinental ballistic missile. So they would point at each other as the reason for their crisis, and what they needed was more money so they could combat what the other side was doing. What's happened now is that Americans are looking at their fellow Americans who disagree with them as though they're the enemy. The practice of democracy is kind of like the way you make a sausage. Somebody once said you'd never eat a sausage if you ever went to the sausage factory. It's not supposed to be neat and clean. The founding fathers, when you talk about the First Amendment, the most people don't realize it. It's not only about freedom of press, speech, and religion. Everybody rattles that off. It's about the right to seek redress of grievances, and boy, do we have a list of those. But it's also the right for peaceable assemblage. Now, why on earth do you think the founding fathers did that? Well, I'll tell you why I believe they did it. Because the founding fathers, in their wisdom, understood that the democratic process requires people of differing viewpoints to have the freedom to come together and have the argument. If need be, scream at each other. All they said is do it peaceably. Leave your gun in the holster, your knife in the scabbard, leave the club outside, and have at it. But now, when you disagree with people, it's a process of vilification. One of the reasons that most sane people don't want to run for political office is it becomes a mudslinging contest. Well, the mudslinging has now gone from the politicians to the general populace. I was with Herman Cain a week after he dropped out of the race when there were all kinds of accusations flying about him. We were both in the green room at Fox. One of the fun things about being on television is when you're in the green room, you never know who you're going to meet. I met Henry Kissinger one day. I'm no fan of his, but it was interesting to meet him. I met Benjamin Netanyahu, and I had worked closely with the Israeli police for 26 years. It was a privilege to meet Netanyahu. You don't know who you're going to meet. And so you go to the green room, and one day I walked in, and Neil Cavuto's producer is all excited and said, oh, you're going to have fun today. Herman Cain is in the green room, Mike. I said, wow, that's cool. And I was surprised he recognized me because of my ugly mug being on TV, I guess, so many times to talk about immigration. And so I walked in, and Herman insisted that I call him Herman, first of all, which I thought was very nice. And he knew who I was, and we started having the conversation. And then they did a little teaser where they brought in a camera, and they interviewed him. And, you know, in the next segment coming up, Herman Cain. So I stepped away from him so they could do that. And then he said, are we done talking yet, Mike? Get back here. I said, okay. So I sat down. I had my cup of coffee in hand, and I said something to Herman that broke him up and everybody else in the green room, including his little entourage who had come with him. I said, you know, watching what happened in the campaign verified for me that my suspicions were correct. He said, what suspicion is that? And you always love it when a former presidential candidate plays your straight man by asking that question. And I said, well, I think you've seen evidence, clear evidence, that anybody seeking high political office in the United States today is demonstrating serious mental illness. And he couldn't stop laughing. He said, you know, he said, I knew it was going to get ugly very quickly because that's politics, but he said, I had no idea the depth to which these people would stoop. And that's what they do with the accusations. playing the race card. If you talk about secure borders, you obviously hate people with brown skin. I did a debate at a college campus a couple of months ago, and one of my buddies, former immigration agent, went over to U.S. probation as a U.S. probation officer, and then he subsequently retired. But during, you know, at night he would go to night school, and he got his Ph.D. in sociology, my good friend George Weisinger. And George got a hold of me one day, and he said, Mike, and this is the day of our reunion. Every year a bunch of us get together. We call it the Titanic Club because the agency certainly sank, but we were all the old-timers from the old Immigration and Naturalization Service. So earlier that day there was going to be a debate on this campus out on Long Island, very pretty campus. He said, why don't you come out and be my partner on this debate? I need you to cover my backside. I said, I'll gladly be your wingman. And we were up against an immigration lawyer and a professor, a woman from Peru, and she didn't think the rules of the debate applied to her. And this seems to be the case that we see constantly with the open borders anarchists. And we as people are foolish. We've allowed our enemies to define us. They refer to people such as myself as being anti-immigrant, which is a lie. But so many people, when they hear anti-immigrant who are on our side, don't push back. If you want to lose a debate, folks, what you need to do is allow your opponent to define you. You've lost. That's how Mike Dukakis lost to George Bush Sr. Bush called him a liberal. He didn't know what to do. He started to redefine himself based on what Bush accused him of. You're done. Stick a fork in it. So well, we were supposed to speak for 15 minutes each. She went on for 40 minutes. And I was flabbergasted, except I got last lick, so I went for 40 minutes, too, and I pointed to my watch, and I smiled at everybody as if to say, I'm taking my 40 also. But it was astonishing, and it was accusation after accusation. The first thing she said was, today you're going to hear from us, and you're going to hear from them. And them are the people that are going to give you the Republican multi-generational American perspective. In other words, probably my ancestors came on the Mayflower, and I'm just to the right of the Nazi Party.
Mazel tov for you.
Mazel tov for me indeed. And I said, well, I think this is the beginning of a pattern that I'm seeing emerging. Forget the rules. They don't apply to my opponents. And it's about making accusations and not knowing from whence they speak. Number one, I'm the son of an immigrant. My mother came to America ahead of the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother who died in the Holocaust because, quote, unquote, we were the wrong religion. We're Jews. And I said, and also, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. So I'm not sure where all these accusations are coming from, but they're interesting to see how wrong my opponent is. But I do believe this is the beginning of the pattern that will emerge throughout this event. And she sat there absolutely seething. And at one point, one of the people in the audience asked me, how do you do a background investigation on somebody from another country? And I said, you know, that's one of the most brilliant questions you could ask because it goes to the whole issue of how do we properly identify people who come to America and evade the inspections process. It's not only that they're undocumented, which is dangerous enough because undocumented means they either don't have or are not willing to admit that they have an official identity document that verifies their true name and nationality. And that would be terrorists and criminals. That's why when you arrest somebody, and you certainly did enough of those, and I did enough of those, most people associate the arrest process with two things, fingerprinting and photographing. Because you know you caught a fish, the question is, what fish did you just catch? So we know that the bad guys lie about their identities. They change identities the way a chameleon changes coloration in order to hide in plain sight, often among its intended victims. But I said there's another issue. An alien who runs the border is uninspected. I said, in fact, as an agent, we used to use the term EWI to describe somebody who ran the border, entry without inspection. And I said, to show you how important it is, let's use an analogy. I said, I'm sure everybody in the room at one time or another has gone to an airport and seen how the TSA increasingly invades our privacy and our Fourth Amendment along with the NSA. I mean, pretty soon they're going to merge TSA with Obamacare. I mean, you may as well have a physical while you're at the airport. They're probing and sticking things in you enough, aren't they? And so the audience laughed. And I said, so here's my question. Would you be willing to get on board an airplane if you saw a bunch of guys or gals with backpacks, perhaps, sneak past the TSA and get on the airplane you're about to get on? I don't think so. Nobody wants a window seat on a cruise missile, correct? So here we're being forced to live among millions of people who evaded a very similar inspections process. It's not like a turnstile jumper, fare beater, as they're referred to in the NYPD. This is like a burglar. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien, in fact, in my jargon, is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. We like company, but not when they climb in through our windows. So that's a problem. But I said, as for the way you do a background investigation, it depends on the country. If you're talking about England, Canada, France, Germany, Japan, New Zealand, Australia, Israel, they're great. Whatever you ask for, you get it quickly and very courteously. In fact, I worked so closely with the Israelis on occasion, they actually flew diplomatic pouches to New York on an off day when they weren't expecting a pouch if it contained a dossier on a major player of an Israeli criminal organization like a drug trafficking gang. So we got perfect cooperation. When you deal with third world countries, there are three possibilities. Number one, they don't have the records, because they're that backward, they're that poor, they don't have a centralized computer database, so it's almost impossible to know who this guy is or whether he's got a criminal history. That's item number one. Possibility number two, the person bribed an official, and in most of those countries it doesn't take much to get a good conduct certificate from the national police that you can present to immigration, and they might even be issued those good conduct certificates as they're walking out of jail having committed rape and arson. Or, for a couple of more bucks, they might even shred their criminal history so the criminal history goes away forever. The other possibility is that those third world countries don't want the bad guys back. They don't want their gangbangers back. They don't want the pedophiles back. They don't want the sociopaths back. So they won't even provide us with an acknowledgement that they know the person or even issue a travel document so we can deport that person. Well, this woman, this professor, jumped up and said, well, Mexico gives us 100% cooperation. I said, really? I said, there's a guy by the name of Stephen McGraw who had testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee, where I've done, I think, 8 or 9 hearings altogether. I believe my last year when I went before the Senate Judiciary Committee, I believe that was my 16th congressional hearing. I was told I hold some kind of a record for a civilian testifying before Congress. But McGraw, back in 03, testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee on the topic of the Mexican matricula cards, the matricula consulares. He described them as a threat to America's national security because there's no verification as to who the card was issued to. And, in fact, he had talked about how one of those cards was found in the hands of an Iranian. Think about that. And they have found other people from other countries with dually issued Mexican cards. These weren't counterfeits. So somehow they got to somebody in the Mexican government who issued them cards in fake names. Those cards are dangerous. So I take with a large grain of salt any claim that Mexico cooperates fully with us. The woman's reaction blew my mind. Do you know what she said to me, Annie?
What?
Your problem, Mr. Cutler, is your view of the world is Eurocentric. Nobody in the audience seemed to initially pick up on it, but I did. Basically, I was being criticized because my ancestors came from Europe. Again, it's the name game. And I grabbed my microphone, did something that I almost never do in a debate. And back in college, my degree was in communications. I tell people I have a BA and BS. I was on the debating teams. But I immediately got my face in front of her face, and in as loud a voice I could come up with, short of screaming, I said, how dare you? Where in the world do you come off making accusations against me and my family because of where my ancestors traced their origins from? I didn't criticize you because you were born in Peru. How dare you criticize me because my family came from Eastern Europe? And you could have heard a pin drop in the room. And I had people come up to me afterwards and say, wow, that was refreshing. I've never seen that. I said, no. As a people, we've become intimidated. I hate bullies. When I was a kid, I was scrawny, and I used to get the crap beat out of me. And my father, being a construction worker, insisted that I go to a gym. I start putting on weight, and I learned how to box. And, you know, all it took were a couple of good fist fights, and the music stopped. Nobody wanted to mess with me. People don't know how to defend themselves anymore. We are wussifying our population. We're being complacent. We're being taught that, oh, no, if someone does something to you, run for help. Don't deal with it yourself. Oh, no, not in America. someone bullies you and pushes you around, go to the authorities or we're going to arrest you, the victim. So what happened here was I got attacked verbally and I went after her. I said, the days of this nonsense of apologizing for allowing my nose to get in the way of your fist, you got the wrong guy. That's not happening. And this is another part of the problem that we're facing. We have Americans today who don't know how to stand their ground. When they're accused of racism, the most common allegation that's made against anybody who wants the immigration laws enforced, the first thing that happens is you hear that you're a racist. So I use analogies. I'm going to try out an analogy on you guys. You tell me what you think. And I just used this when I was in front of a room filled with Air Force brass. And a good percentage were minority members. And I said that during that horrific era of American history, when slavery immorally was permitted, was considered business as usual, would it mean you didn't like black people if you didn't want to own a slave?
That was a
good
one.
We are exploiting people. We are exploiting people, and we are humiliating Americans. How many millions of Americans are multi-generational? I hate using the term because I associate it with that sleazy professor. Multi-generational Americans whose grandfathers perhaps were at Iwo Jima or Normandy, whose fathers fought at the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, and they themselves may have just come home from a tour of duty in Afghanistan. But yet, because their last name is Garcia, Rodriguez, Garza, God only knows, immediately people look and say, Jeff, what country that guy is from? Because we've convinced all Americans that this is about Latinos, and it's not. As an immigration agent, I spent years investigating and arresting illegal aliens from Europe, Asia, Africa, the Caribbean, the Middle East, you name it. This is not about Mexicans or Latin America. Yeah, they send us more illegal aliens than any other country because of geography. But in terms of the immigration laws, there's no such distinction. And so we get to the term alien, almost as though it's hate speech. Oh, alien, it sounds kind of like the N-word. No, it doesn't. The word alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. But the reason that the open borders crowd, the immigration anarchists, the people who oppose national security, if you want to talk about anti, they are anti-American security. This started with Jimmy Carter. They don't want you to use the word alien, not because it's hate speech, but because it provides clarity to the discussion. And when you try to pull a fast one over somebody, the last thing you want is clarity. Magicians operate with blue smoke and mirrors and all kinds of distractions. They'll bring out some little 20-year-old young lady with a great body and put her in a little skimpy outfit, and she prances all over the stage, and people don't know where to look first. It's all about distracting you and obfuscating what they're doing. And here, the obfuscation comes with the accusations, the bullying tactics, and the artful use of misleading language.
Now, Mike, if I can get a word in here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that to you.
Oh, no. I enjoy it. I love when I just sit back and let someone else do that. But you mentioned the border, the recent events on the border, with all these 47,000 children that got dumped over. Now, what blew my mind is that a lot of them have MS-16 gang members in there, identifiable plainly by their tats. I was watching video of some of the places, the holding pens where these guys are and gals, and a lot of them were a lot older than 8, 9, or 10. A lot of them were teenagers and young men.
Yep.
And then...
And by the way...
They said they're coming over to escape gangs, but that got blown way out of the water.
Well, look, first of all, I don't even know where the numbers are coming from because I don't believe their numbers. Just like I don't believe the 11 million. I think it's a lot more than the numbers they're giving us. Just like when Obama said that the DREAM Act was about young people, children. Do you know what the age cutoff for the DREAM Act is?
31, isn't it?
Yeah. Is that a child? I mean, I'm on the wrong side of 60, so 31 sounds awfully young. But a child? Really? And as far as MS-13, I agree. I started investigating MS-13 out on the island back in the early 90s. And by the not-so-benign neglect by our government, this thing flourished and mushroomed into a nightmare for us. The cartels, the Mexican cartels, MS-13, all these gangs control the border, okay? If you really want to know if the border is secure, forget the arrests. Those arrest statistics are as meaningless as the unemployment rate. You know, I've jokingly said that the unemployment rate that they give us, 6.3%, is kind of like the kid who comes home and tries to impress his parents and says, you know, I've been flunking science all year, but I finally got an 80 on my last test. And the parents get all excited. They want to take this kid out to dinner and a movie. And then they review the kid's test, and they realize, yeah, he got an 80 on the first question and zeros on all the other questions. So it's all misleading. There's probably 30 to 40 million illegal aliens in our country right now. I suspect there are many more criminals and gang members coming in than they're claiming. And this goes to the issue of this huge haystack that's being created. We know that we've had terrorists sent to the United States by running the border, not just coming in by committing visa fraud. And none of the holes are being plugged. None of the holes are being plugged. We know that the way that visas were issued to aliens was problematic. And that became identified as a real problem. In fact, the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony, spent a lot of time talking about the visa process, that they've got to scrutinize visas far more carefully. So here's something for you to think about. The visa process, which was identified as a matter of nothing less than national security, yet we had 26 visa waiver countries on 9/11. Their citizens didn't need a visa before coming into the United States. Do you know how many visa waiver countries we have now? 38. Chile just became number 38 just about 2 months ago.
38? If the process, jeez.
Yes. If the process to issue visas has to be tightened up, how do you explain not ending the visa waiver program instead of expanding it? We used to have something known as transit without visa, where an alien that was going from New York to, let's say, Argentina would land in New York and maybe the next day hop on a flight and fly down to Buenos Aires. They didn't need a visa because they were in transit to another country. They had up to 10 days to stay in the United States. Do you know how long it took George W. Bush to end the transit without visa program? And he didn't even end it. He suspended it. He didn't terminate it. He suspended it. August of 2002, almost a full year after 9/11, because of pressure being applied by the hotel, hospitality, travel industries backed up by the Chamber of Commerce in Washington. Doesn't it give you great comfort knowing that the executives in charge of room service are making national security decisions for the United States? I have to read something to you real quickly when we talk about what's happening on the border. And when you meet politicians, this is the question, folks, you need to ask any member of Congress who's trying to do what they're trying to do. You have to ask them, why aren't they looking at the 9/11 Commission report before they make any decisions or have any conversation about immigration? Here's how it starts out. This is the preface from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. The 9/11 Commission staff looked at the 9/11 Commission report, which went into quite a bit of detail, by the way, about how immigration was used as a weapon against us. But their own staff said, you know what, the Commission didn't go far enough, so they wrote their own volume and focused on immigration. So here's how it starts. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe that for reasons we discuss in the following pages that it must be made one. So now, there were two other quick quotes. This is from that same report. This one is on page 98. Let me do 47 first. Page 47 says this. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program after falsely claiming that he picked beans in Florida. And then finally, we come to page 98. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, think about the Dreamers, folks, or applying for asylum after entering, think of Boston. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack.
Now, this brings me back to my original question about what's happening with these kids coming across the border, because you and I know that the terrorists have ganged up with the drug cartels in South America and Central America, and they're training the kids. They're training the kids that are now becoming gang members on how to do terrorist acts. Now, these are the very same kids that are being tossed over the border.
Yep.
This all comes back down to that, and everyone says, oh, what do you do with innocent children? Most of them are not innocent children, and the ones that are innocent, don't we have laws here in the United States about child abandonment, child endangerment? Why aren't we getting on the phone with the governments these kids are coming from and saying, what are you doing about these people abandoning the children? Now, everyone's coming across the border because they're saying that the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the DACA, they call them. And
the DREAM Act, basically, that was implemented by executive order without the benefit of legislation.
And now our government is going to Mexico, Central America, South America, and telling them how they can come across and get food stamps and welfare, and telling everyone that the DACA has been extended another 2 years. That's why these kids are being dumped, but it's also an excuse to help get more terrorists over the border.
More terrorists, more criminals, and why is nobody prosecuting the parents, or at the very least, uniting the kids with the parents, because we know that many cases the parents are already here, and sending them home as a family unit. They keep talking about, you know, reunification of families. So you have illegal aliens in the United States that we refuse to deport, and now the administration is reuniting families inside the United States. And according to an article that I just saw, the president was thinking about giving an award to some of the activists for illegal aliens and referring to them as champions for change. Yeah, they're changing America's climate, America's – and if you want to talk about sustainability, how is this sustainable? But you see, it's both parties. Ted Cruz, as we know, wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas and wants to double the legal immigration. Last year, more than a million lawful immigrants entered the United States. They were given green cards and placed on the pathway to citizenship. Ted Cruz wants that number to go to 2 million. Last year, 65,000 aliens were given high-tech H-1B visas. He wants that number to go to 325,000 and for the first time permit the wives and adult children, there's an oxymoron, of H-1B visa holders to take any job in America, even if it displaces American workers. See, the immigration laws prior to the Second World War were enforced and administered by the Labor Department. That's how we built the middle class, by shielding American workers from foreign competition. Alan Greenspan went before Chuck Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee in the Senate on April 30th, 2009. He referred to Americans with skills, meaning education and so forth, as the privileged elite who were earning this unfair wage premium. And Greenspan went on and said that the goal should be to greatly reduce inequality in wages. And that sounds good because, you know, we certainly don't want inequality, not when it's based on race, religion, or gender. But that wasn't what he was talking about. He wanted to eliminate inequality based on skill, which is the American dream. The guy with the PhD, you would presume, makes more than the person with the master's degree. The guy with the master's degree makes more than someone with a BA. And the guy with the BA makes more than somebody with a, you know, with a high school diploma. That was the American dream. If you have better education and better skill sets, you make more money. Greenspan wants to destroy the middle class so that people like Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and all these other Silicon Valley thugs can get what they want, unlimited cheap labor. And so when you watch television and John Stossel has this program, Give Me a Break, and he was talking about farm subsidies a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know anything about farm subsidies, so I'm not going to have that conversation. You know, whenever I've been on television or I testify or whatever, if people ask me a question about something that I don't know, I'll tell you I don't know. You know, opinions are worthless unless they're backed up by facts or experience. But then Stossel went from farm subsidies and said, why can't they be more like Silicon Valley? Because those brilliant people don't take a penny from us, and they make wonderful stuff. What he ignored blithely is that they are taking plenty from us. They're getting the U.S. government to undermine American middle-class workers by admitting competition into the United States. We're supposed to be shielding Americans from that competition and from criminals and from aliens with dangerous diseases. If you haven't noticed, folks, there's been a resurgence in polio. We thought we vanquished it. There's a resurgence in the measles. We thought we were done with that. We have increasing instances of resistant tuberculosis. There's all kinds of problems. There's now a Middle East respiratory infection that has shown up in the United States. Ellis Island was a quarantine station. Realize that the immigration laws protect us. There's nothing unfair about it. And yesterday when I did a segment for the One American News Network, I asked a question, and they'll have the link up in a couple of days. Go to michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. I'm sure we'll have the links up. But I said that what we're now doing as a country is rewarding people who evade the inspections process and treating them indistinguishably from people who abide by the law. So imagine you're driving down the Jersey Turnpike, going to Washington, D.C., which I do often enough, and they have two lanes on the Jersey Turnpike. One says easy pass, where you slow down to 55 miles an hour, and they were able to scan that transponder, your easy pass transponder, or you pay cash. Imagine if they put a third lane in that said no speed limit, free. What would that say about the mental state of anybody who would take either of the other two lanes?
Absolutely. Man, you got me going.
That's a great point. That is a great point.
We do have a caller in on the line, a fellow BTR sure. host, Thomas. Thomas, you have a question for my friend Mike Cutler. Thomas?
Hello, Thomas.
Thomas, I think, fell asleep. So, Thomas, if you do want to ask a question, just hit number one on your phone, and we'll try to bring you back on. You know, I don't even know where to start with you. You know, talking about...
I'll throw a question out there from Mike. Mike,
all right.
What's wrong with our mindset? I mean, earlier I asked the question in general. Where are the people that used to just grab the baseball bat and take action? Where are they?
They've been intimidated, and they don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to be called names. But I'll tell you what I find remarkable. And for those of you out there listening to the program, if you become aware of opportunities for speaking events, let me know. I've traveled all over the country. I've testified at trials in Hawaii. I've been before campuses up in Seattle and California, Texas. I'm heading to California next month, in fact. I'm willing to do it. I've been on college campuses where I had protesters screaming at me. Within 10 minutes, they put their picket signs down. Within 15 minutes, instead of screaming at me, they were screaming with me because suddenly their BS detectors went off and they realized they were being lied to. Do you know that we have over 1 million foreign students in the United States right now? Do you know that among the top 10 countries sending us their students is Saudi Arabia? Now, I'm sure there's some very decent people from Saudi Arabia. I'm not trying to paint with a brush the way that the other side does. I am certain that there are wonderful people who are citizens of Saudi Arabia. However, we know that the Saudis played a pivotal role in the 9/11 terror attacks. On the one hand, we don't want Iran to get nuclear weapons. On the other hand, we're now working with them in Iraq, and boy, do they want anything to get their hands on Iraq. I remember Persia, going back historically, was actually both countries together. Wouldn't Iran love to reacquire Iraq, and we're doing what we can to help them? I mean, the world has gone upside down. But we also have Iranian students studying engineering and physics in the United States. So, no, we're not going to let them get the nuclear weapons, but we will train them. I mean, the disconnect is beyond belief. You had Mitt Romney running for president talking about how he was going to help Americans find work on the one hand, but on the other hand said that we need to staple green cards onto the diplomas of foreign students. We don't have enough jobs to go around right now. We have tens of millions or maybe more unemployed Americans right now. So obviously the solution to unemployment is to bring in more workers. That's like playing musical chairs by bringing in more kids but not adding any chairs. How is that going to wind up? And yet the average American doesn't get it.
No, they
don't. They started a new company here in Michigan. We have a new department in Michigan, the Department of New Americans. Translated normal, it's Department of Sweatshop and Slave Labor. But it's a new department.
Absolutely.
We got a caller in on the line. I believe this is a South Carolina call. Area code 803, you're on the air live with Cool Mike, Annie, and our guest Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking to?
Tim.
Yeah, hi, Tim. You have a question from Mike?
Well, yes, and an observation also. I think possibly all these kids that are coming in might actually be considered economic warfare, because if you stop and think from mid-Guatemala to Laredo is about 2,700 miles when these Central Americans cross into Mexico. They got to cross some serious rivers, and they have to have passports and visas to do it legal. They're supposedly impoverished with not a lot of money, and it usually takes money to pay bribes. And 29 hours driving straight, according to MapQuest or Google Maps. You know, it takes them longer. It's a long trip, and I can't believe that it's I know that Mexico just created their own border patrol to police their southern border, and they used to be snatching them up, and the border bandits were getting them, and it wasn't a real fun trip, but somehow they make it all the way up, and somehow they cross that almighty fence that they've been putting up for years and defeat the return on the taxpayers' investment to, you know, thousands and thousands can magically cross and find themselves a Border Patrol agent to surrender to. And it just sort of a little mind-boggling, and I'll get off.
Tim, in the 2 years we've been doing this show, Tim, that is one of the best callers we've ever had making that observation. I mean, exactly what he said. I think that's the game plan laid out all along. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut anyone off.
No, that's all right. That sounds like my friend Tim Hattaling. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
Hiya, Tim. How are you?
I mean, think about being in jail, and think about when you get in your cell. The plans are laid out on how to escape successfully. I mean, that's exactly it.
But you see, I also believe that the reason that Mexico enforces its southern border is because they don't want to have foreign nationals competing with their illegal aliens in the United States. So somebody in Mexico has to be getting some serious bribes over this deal.
No, that is a good question. You know, who is getting paid off on this whole thing? Because the only way they're enforcing the northern border here with the United States is if we cross over.
Right.
You know,
it's a one way. It's like a ratchet. Marine. It only goes one way.
Yeah, that poor Marine that's still sitting in jail now. What is this, going on 3 months? And our dear sweet president hasn't done anything, but he brings a traitor back home.
Yep.
So this is the other thing that.
By
really
the way,
got me.
It wouldn't be half bad if he brought back a traitor. Period. But he also released five of the worst.
Yes,
there's
he did.
There's a swap. That's really a lose-lose.
Now you were trying to tie our illegal immigration in with Syria, but I want to ask you this because I know this cannot possibly be a coincidence. We have that one terrorist from Benghazi episode on September 11, 2012, that they caught and is supposedly bringing over here for trial and giving him his Miranda rights in New York. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton tonight is going on Fox News. Now, don't you think the timing is just a little unusual for both of these things to be happening at the same time?
Absolutely. It's always been the timing. You know, politicians are very astute about timing, but this administration and Hillary in particular are, of course. But, you know, I have to ask the obvious question, Ann. What difference does it make?
I can hear her saying that. You know, and that line, unfortunately, is not going to come back enough to bite her in the butt. And she's going to throw her hat in the ring.
And she will. And, you know, here's what's so remarkable. I did my first congressional hearing on May 20th, 1997, 4.5 years after the two terrorist attacks committed in the United States, 1st, 93, we had the attack at the CIA in January. Two CIA officers killed, three wounded by an individual by the name of Kansi, a Pakistani who applied for asylum, lied through his teeth, fled the country. By the way, that's an advantage that international terrorists and criminals have. They are able to leave through an escape hatch if they can get out of the United States and head to some other country, preferably their own. They're home free, usually. In the case of Kansi, our special forces dragged him out, brought him here, put him on trial, found him guilty, and executed him, but the people he killed remain dead. Next month, you have the first attack at the Trade Center. So the House Immigration Subcommittee holds this hearing May 20th, 1997, about visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud. Clearly, we understood that this was the risk. What did the Clinton administration do in response? Nothing. In fact, they implemented a program known as CUSA, Citizenship USA, CUSA, where they ran over a million applications for citizenship through the administrative system quicker than you-know-what goes through a goose. And 9-11 happened, and 9-11 happened, and then I got called before Congress again, first by Tancredo with the Immigration Reform Caucus, and then March of 2002, I was astonished. I got a call from the minority counsel, Leon Buck, who was working with Sheila Jackson Lee, the ranking member of the House Immigration Subcommittee at the time, because I found out that day something I didn't know. The day earlier, to everyone's horror and astonishment, it was discovered that 6 months to the day after 9-11, two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta, one of the ringleaders, and Al-Shehi, had been granted authorization to attend, of all things, flight school in the United States 6 months after the attacks.
I remember that.
So I was called before that hearing. So what have we learned? We now have a million foreign students in the United States attending 9,000 schools, 7,000 ICE agents, more than half of whom are doing customs and not immigration work. We don't even know if those schools exist on paper. And then you look at a case of a guy by the name of Earl Seth David. Earl Seth David was an immigration lawyer in New York. For 12 years he ran his law firm, and it's believed that over a 12-year period of time, he got visas for more than 25,000 foreign workers to do jobs, supposedly, that did not exist except on paper. And when Seth Earl David was served with a notice that his law license was being suspended, he feared that arrest was imminent. What do you think he did? He went up to Canada. And in Canada, he continued to mail in the applications for his clients. And believe it or not, immigration continued to process the applications from a lawyer whose license had been suspended. There was nothing in the report or the press releases issued by either the Justice Department or ICE about any efforts being made to look for those aliens. And ultimately, Earl Seth David and 25 other people in his law firm mostly were charged with only one count of mail fraud and one count of immigration fraud, but they brought in thousands upon thousands of illegal aliens over a 12-year period. Now, how insane is this?
Absolutely, absolutely, totally insane. Because I remember any time we arrested someone that we believed was an illegal alien and know that the person was an illegal alien, we were not allowed to contact ICE.
And it cost Robert Machotti his life. And that policy cost a 24-year-old cop by the name of Bob Machotti his life. I had physically deported
a
guy. Yes, I know he was a friend of yours. And, you know, Machotti was killed a couple of days after my good friend Everett Hatcher, the DEA agent, was killed in Staten Island. What a disaster this all was. And understand the issue. We had physically deported. I put the guy on an airplane. This guy, Ronaldo Rayside, he comes back to the United States, not once, but twice gets arrested by the NYPD, and I had worked with Al D'Amato to make such reentry a 20-year maximum offense because the guy was a criminal alien. This was clearly a felony. The NYPD was prohibited by Giuliani. It's both sides of the aisle, folks. It's not just one side. If those cops that arrested him had called immigration, they would have been up on charges. So he was released. And the third time he gets pulled over by a Machotti for committing a violation of motor vehicle law. This guy goes for Machotti's gun, bullets fly, and that police officer died on a street corner in Brooklyn. He was part of the Brooklyn South Task Force, and I'd done a lot of work with Brooklyn South. I testified at the murder trial. I met his daughter, and he never had that opportunity because his wife was pregnant when he was killed. This is insanity. This is not victimless. We are undermining our workers. We are undermining national security. We're undermining public health. We're undermining our economy. Last year, at least $125 billion, with a B, was wired out of our economy to the countries that sent us their workers. And the country that gets the most money in all the world in remittances is not Mexico. It's India. It's India. Last year, India got between $60 and $70 billion from their workers working in countries across the planet, including the United States. And when the United States, when the United States said that we were going to increase the cost of an H-1B visa, do you know that India threatened to go to the UN to file formal charges against the United States for unfairly charging too much for visas so their people could come to America to work?
Who gives a shit if they go to the UN? Jump off a cliff.
But understand the problem, though. This is what we are encouraging, but I assure you that if the UN imposed the fine, the administration would gladly pay it, because this is all about taking money from America, looting our economy, because that $125 billion, and some estimates run to $200 billion, if you look at the multiplier effect for those of you who never heard about it, is this. This was the reason for the economic stimulus package. Every dollar that gets put into the economy generates $3 in business. So in other words, if, let's say, for argument's sake, I write an article and I'm paid $1,000 for my article, and I say to my wife, you know what, I'm going to go out and buy a couple of pairs of sneakers and a couple pairs of blue jeans. So I go to my local store and I buy the clothing. The salesman gets a commission. The store makes a profit. The people that get paid go out, and one guy buys a refrigerator. The other guy buys lumber for his new backyard, his new deck, and that money goes to somebody else and so forth. So the idea is that every dollar thrown into the economy generates three more dollars. But if you take the money and suck it right out of the economy, then you're losing the equivalent of three times whatever the amount is. So if it's that lowball figure of $125 billion, you're still looking at close to $400 billion leaving our economy. If it's $200 billion, now we're talking about $600 billion. We're in the ballpark of a half trillion, round numbers. Our deficit goes up by $1 trillion a year right now. So if you add to that the multiplier effect of the money being wired out of our economy by foreign workers, both legal and illegal, if you look at wage suppression of American workers, if you look at the Americans who are losing their jobs and losing their homes to foreclosure, going from being tax-paying consumers in the middle class to people living below the poverty line with no disposable income, the impact on our economy is greater than the amount that the deficit increases every year. And that's before we get to the quality of life issues about how this impacts the way that Americans live in their own country.
We got another
Mike, why don't Americans see that? It's so simple. What the hell is wrong with Americans?
All right, now let me ask you a question. Of everything I discussed just now, did you know about this before?
Yes. Yeah. We got another caller here, Mike, coming in. Let me get this caller in the line. Area code 334, you're on the air live with Southern Sense and our guest, Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking to? Area code 334.
Hi. I'm Lady J from Moonwalk on Bully Radio.
Hi, Lady. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I was wondering if you guys would like to tune in at 4 to listen to our radio show called Moonwalk on Bully Radio. It's called 4 O'Clock Talk.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. We got also our friend, looks like Thomas came back in on the line. Let me bring Thomas back in.
Thomas,
good afternoon.
Hey, I'm glad to call in because I wanted to talk to my very favorite Democrat. And you guys know that when I say favorite Democrat, this individual has to be very special. Mike, I apologize because when you was last on the show, I forget what it was, but we hit it off and you had asked Annie to pass your contact information on to me so that I could call you, and I never called you. So I apologize for that.
That's okay.
But and I'm going to have Annie pass it on to me again because I definitely love your stance on immigration because you're proof positive that despite one's political affiliation, you still believe in the notion of right is right and wrong is wrong, and I appreciate that about you. And it's people like you, Annie, Mike, and others, why I refuse, despite what's going on in this nation, why I refuse to give up on this country, because people like you still give individuals like me hope, and I can say, hey, here's a Democrat that I can relate to regardless of the fact how the rest of the folks act. You're someone that I could relate to because of your principles. You've served your country. I don't know if you served in military, but was it DEA in New York? Or
INS, INS agent.
Oh, INS, okay. Well, you still served your country. So I appreciate that, and keep up the good work. So.
Well, thank
that's
you,
all
Tom.
I wanted to say.
Thank you. Well, you know,
you're
it's
welcome.
An interesting point. Immigration isn't about left or right. It's about right or wrong, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's about
also
being
about,
American.
It's also about the millions and millions and millions that followed the law of the land. I don't know what. Go ahead. Take it in.
Well, it's true. You know, you say illegal alien, and you're saying you're a racist. I said, wait a minute. They are here illegally. They did not come through the normal channel, right? They're not born
right.
here. They're born in another country. So that makes them, number one, illegal, and number two, an alien. Oh, no, they're undocumented workers. Well, isn't that still breaking the law? Doesn't that still make them illegal?
Well, you know what's so funny? What's funny is CBS News, you know, they will not use the term illegal alien, right? Undocumented worker or whatever, undocumented immigrant. Well, it was funny because the day after Labor Day weekend, this was on a Tuesday, and I remember I had gotten up early. I don't know if I was going into a TV studio or whatever, but I remember showering with the radio on. I always listen to the radio. And they were talking about people who had gone to the beach even after they had posted signs. They closed off the fences, and there were signs posted that said, you know, closed for the winter or whatever, closed for autumn, because after the Labor Day weekend in the New York area, New Jersey area, the beaches are no longer for bathing, no longer for swimming, because there's no longer any lifeguards on duty. Well, guess what? The same radio station that would not talk about illegal aliens talked about illegal swimmers, and I could not stop laughing.
Illegal swimmers.
Illegal swimmers. I said, well, I guess you can swim illegally, but you can't be here illegally? Really?
Mike, when you were... I mean, first of all, Mike, God bless for just who you are. When you were working, when you were actually working in enforcement,
right.
Was this talk taboo? Was this kind of talk prevalent? You know what?
You mean the use of the word? Well, as I said, it started with Jimmy Carter saying that we shouldn't use the word illegal alien. I got so angry, I decided to call them pre-citizens, and that actually caught on. I got a call from a Border Patrol agent one day, and he said, I need a file on one of them pre-citizens. And I couldn't stop laughing. I thought, well, goodness, it's finally spread clear across the country now. You know, language is critical. Language is critical. And the other side keeps on changing the language, and I don't. And the arguments that we've heard from both sides on a host of issues are mind-boggling. People need to read 1984. It used to be required reading. It no longer is. But all four of my kids read 1984 because I was adamant about it. But, I mean, think of the crazy things we've heard. We're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Remember that? That was a big phrase. It was almost like 54-40 or fight. We're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over. And I'm like, wait a minute. Where in the world was the Trade Center? Where's the Pentagon? Where's Shanksville, Pennsylvania? Isn't that over here? Where are we strip-searching people getting on board airplanes? Where is the NSA snooping? What do you mean we're not fighting them over here? You can't pull into a parking garage in New York without them telling you to open the trunk and they put a mirror under your car. And I don't have a problem with that. But please don't tell me we're not fighting them over here. Item number one. Then we heard another one of their little phrases. I'm trying to think of all these crazy phrases. But when you start to strip it, oh, yes, Germany had a fence. Why do we want a fence? Well, the German fence was designed to keep people in, not keep people out. So I was on MSNBC debating one of these yo-yos from one of these groups, and they said, well, Germany had a fence. I said, you're right. You got me. Germany had a fence. And you know what? Prisons have gates. The White House has a gate. I guess the White House is a correctional facility.
Now, Mike, do you remember back in the 90s, we had a Detective Hartung, Frank Hartung?
The name is familiar. I remember the name.
Yeah, thick German accent. He looked like, you know, he worked in a beer house. He was the very first one to go over that wall on a motorcycle successfully.
Where was this?
Yeah, the Berlin Wall.
Oh, is that right? On a motorcycle, huh?
He jumped the wall while it was still the barbed wire fence, and he and his friends put this motorcycle together, made a ramp, and he did it, and he landed successfully. And God bless his heart, he joined the U.S. Army and then NYPD. And I don't know where he is now, but he probably could tell you stories, too. You know, I got a question. Why have you never written a book? With all the stories you have, why haven't you put this down?
Well, I would love to. I've spoken to publishers. You would think that I wanted to write a book of advocacy for pedophiles. I mean, it's just remarkable. But I'm trying to put some stuff together, and hopefully things will work out, and it will be an interesting story that I'll have for you. But I've tried to do that, and I'm telling you, publishers have such little interest in it, and it blows my mind. Because there is a mistaken impression that the other side has been so good at vilifying people. And, you know, if you stop and look at what we're doing, the greatest impact, and I've written a whole bunch of articles. In fact, the Washington Times has a digital magazine now called American Currency, CURRENTSEE, Currency. Armstrong Williams, the radio talk show host, is the editor of it. He made me the proverbial offer I couldn't refuse last week. Armstrong called me up, and I'm on his show frequently, and he said, Mike, if you could write a story about the harm done to America's minorities by immigration policies, it'll be the cover story for the magazine. So I did it, and it was. American Currency ran my story as the cover story for this past Sunday's edition, and it was about the idea that securing our border isn't anti-immigrant, but it's pro-American. And that's the issue. See, American, it's funny, when I debated that woman that we talked about, and she was using PowerPoint and all this other business, and, you know, I don't believe in PowerPoint. I believe in painting pictures with words. And in fact, I usually joke about it, that when I was young and single, if I met a young lady and I wanted her phone number, they didn't even have PowerPoint back then. And if I could get a phone number without PowerPoint then, I don't need it now. But the point of the matter is that this woman used PowerPoint. And the first thing she did was show all these faces of children and said, these are the faces of immigrants. And I looked at that picture and I said, I don't know, they look like American kids to me. See, the point of the matter is America is the most ethnically diverse country on the planet. This isn't about racial purity or bigotry. We hear this nonsense that immigration is the new civil rights movement. That's nonsense. It has nothing to do with civil rights. Civil rights is the right to be a full participant in a society, and certainly every American should be able to be a full participant in the American society. Absolutely. The civil rights movement of the 60s was vital. Everybody who is an American should have the same opportunities and the same abilities to do what's best. We are taking that from our children by bringing in foreign workers. I confronted a member of Congress a couple of months ago, and I said, if you keep on bringing in more people to study at our schools, and you keep on bringing in more foreign workers, you're depriving Americans their share of the American dream. You look at a child living in poverty, and as a cop, you saw what I saw out there. It's brutal. Children mm-hmm. living in buildings where the stench stays in your nostrils for weeks, where rats run through the hallways, where these kids wake up and the walls, we used to call them moving walls. I don't know if you did that, but I'm sure you heard that phrase.
Walls. Yeah.
You turn on the light switch, and there's so many insects infesting the apartment, you can't see the walls for the insects. It looks like the football stands with the fans doing the wave. And these kids are waking up covered with bugs. They go to bed hungry. What would you be willing to do to get out of that? Now, better yet, what would you not be willing to do? And most of these kids quickly realize that with no opportunities and no hope and nobody behind them, the only opportunity they have to get out of that building is not a $15 an hour job at McDonald's if they ever raise the rate to that. And I don't have a problem with raising minimum wages. That's why I'm a liberal. I think you should pay people enough money to justify setting your alarm clock to go to work in the morning. But the point of the matter is you're still not going to get out of poverty on a $15 an hour job. The only way out of poverty for those kids is to become criminals. And the ones that become the criminals very often, the real bright ones, become the ringleaders of gangs that are violent, that kill people. And these kids wind up in one of two places in short order. Very often before their 25th birthday, they're either in the cemetery or a jail cell, because we have created a maze, and no matter where they turn, they find themselves at a dead end. If we want to stop that pattern, and if we want to improve the quality of life, not only for those children, but for their victims, then the solution is to provide opportunities and change the whole game. We're not doing that. We're making it worse. We're bringing in 1 million foreign students a year. We can't even verify that these people are going to schools or that the schools exist. It threatens national security. It threatens our economy. It creates a caste system in the United States where the poor are guaranteed to remain poor and where the middle class will quickly join them. This is not a government, as Abraham Lincoln so eloquently described in the Gettysburg Address, of the people, by the people, or for the people. This is about providing the corporations what they want, limitless supply of cheap, exploitable, compliant labor. There's always room for more oarsmen on the slave ship.
We got Thomas with one more question. Thomas, go ahead.
Hey, I wanted to see if Mike could address, I posted an article on my Facebook page, and it kind of speaks to the illegal immigration, but yet in Southern California, you have Mexican gangs that are running, that are trying to run black families out of Southern California. I posted that article on my Facebook page with this caption: here is something that the mainstream media will not tell you about, the direct targeting of black people in Southern California by illegal alien gangbangers. But your current administration is totally okay with the brutal attack on black people by their latest pet project.
Okay, and your question, all right, and your question is?
Can you kind of speak to that? What's your thought on that? Because
Terry Anderson, the late great talk show host, he used to have a wonderful expression. He used to say, in that big roaring voice of his, he'd come on stage wearing his bib coveralls, if you remember Terry, and he would say, if you ain't mad, you ain't paying attention.
Right.
Look, gangs are territorial. The carnage that they're running up, whether it's Latino against black, black against Latino, or Latino against Latino. You know, one of the things I observed out here on Long Island in New York was when MS-13 started to fire itself up and started to recruit members, they were up against another group from El Salvador known as Salvadorans with Pride, and they were also of the same ethnicity.
Wow.
Yeah, and they were killing each other routinely. I was working with the police on this. We have police officers. We have members of Congress now that are trying to push something called the Enlist Act to bring illegal aliens into the military. What could possibly go wrong with that? Wait one second. I'm trying to answer your question. What we have right now is a problem with gang members in the United States military. The FBI did a report on it. Gang graffiti has shown up in the Middle East. We had a situation in the late 70s, early 80s, and this isn't about Mexicans or Latinos. Let's think in terms, broader terms. You had people from the Caribbean, Jamaicans, Panamanians, people from Trinidad, Barbados, St. Lucia, getting visas to come to the United States, in some case, to work in the apple orchards in upstate New York or the orange groves, the citrus groves of Florida. They never showed up on the farm. They were coming to New York, getting phony ID by recruiters from the U.S. Marine Corps, joining the military, not because they wanted to be Americans. They wanted weapons and tactical training, and then when they got the training, they went AWOL, they stole weapons out of the armories, they were pulling off commando-style bank robberies throughout the New York City area. I was working with the NYPD, ATF, and what was then Office of Naval Intelligence, now it's NIS, Naval Investigative Service. The carnage was amazing. It was horrific, and we had trained these people. Right now, look what's happened in Mexico. Los Zetas is the most violent of all the drug gangs. Los Zetas started out as the elite of Mexico's military and Mexico's law enforcement agencies. We gave them our playbook, and we gave them weapons. Initially, they became the enforcers for the cartel, ultimately they supplanted the cartel. They said, hey, why do we need to work for them? We'll take over. These are the guys that are doing the beheadings. These are probably the people that are behind those billboards that showed up in El Paso that had in Spanish the two words, silver or lead. In Mexico, you associate that with saying you either take the bribe, silver, or we're going to give you some lead, meaning bullets, we're going to kill you. This
wow.
is spreading across the border. Right now, if you want to know whether our border is secure, you look at the price and availability of heroin and cocaine. The New York City Police Department has issued 20,000 cops, roughly half of the department, the antidote to heroin overdoses. DEA last year announced that 35% of all heroin seizures in the United States were made in the state of New York. This is not just about the Mexican border. This is coming at us from every direction. It's permeating every town and city.
Wow.
We're being told, don't put more than 7 bullets in your gun, although now they did amend that the SAFE Act so that retired law enforcement can carry the guns they carried when they were on duty so that we're not encumbered with that ridiculous requirement. But, I mean, do you really think that a bank robber, a terrorist, or some wackaloon is going to sit there counting out, oh, gee whiz, I have 8 bullets in my magazine, I better take one of the bullets out? No, they're going to do what they're going to do. If you want to go after the violence, go after the drugs. Go after the gangs. Annie, as a former cop, I'm sure you'll agree with me, the great majority of crime is directly or indirectly related to narcotics. Would you agree with me?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can think of very, very few arrests that I made that did not involve drugs. I'm including also domestic abuse, because somewhere along
sure.
the way, one of the family members is using, and they broke into the house to steal mama's stuff or their girlfriend's stuff so they can buy more drugs with whatever they hawk. I would say 90%
easily. Prostitution,
absolutely.
Driving under the influence. How many people are killed that way? People that are higher than a kite and they plow into somebody or kill somebody. I mean, look, if we're going to be smart about this, if we're going to be moral about this, if the government is really going to stand for the American people, that border's got to be shut. When there are home invaders roaming your neighborhood, police will tell you, keep your doors locked. Get rid of the shrubs near the windows and doors and put lights up so people can see if someone's trying to sneak into your house. Common sense. The same way that a responsible homeowner locks the door at night and looks through the peephole before admitting a stranger into the home is what immigration's supposed to be. When I worked with the state of Arizona to help them against that outrageous lawsuit by the Justice Department, well, maybe I should call it the Department of Injustice, I had said that for the first 4 years of my career when I started as an immigration inspector, in a manner of speaking, I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door. So if you tell people that it's racist to not want to enforce the immigration laws, then it's like saying that you're antisocial if you lock your door at night. And by the way, let me be real clear. Maybe this will help all of you that are listening. The immigration law is very specific about who we're supposed to keep out of the United States. It doesn't talk about race, religion, or ethnicity. I will tell you up front, if it did, I would never have done the job. My family was decimated during the Holocaust because we were Jews. The immigration laws start out, and you can go to Title 8 of the United States Code, Section 1181. What I'm giving you is verifiable. Aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Aliens who are seriously mentally ill, sex offenders, or are violent. Aliens who are fugitives from justice or previously deported. Aliens who are criminals, robbers, gang members, gun runners, money launderers, right down the list, murderers, arsonists, excludable. Aliens who are war criminals, spies, or terrorists are excludable. Aliens who would come to America and then become a public charge, excludable. Aliens who would take the job of an American worker, excludable. That's it. I want to know, of all those categories, how unfair do you think it is that we want to keep out people that fall into those groups? And for the most part, would you want people who are excludable to living next door to you in that vacant apartment next to your apartment right now? And I'm pretty sure if you're reasonable and honest, you're going to say, no, I don't want any of those living next door to me. This isn't about prejudice. It's about common sense. You don't want a child molester living next door to you or in your neighborhood. You don't want a murderer or an arsonist or a psychopath living next to. That's what we're trying to keep out. Terrorists and spies, human rights violators, war criminals. Should we be providing safe haven for those thugs? Of course not. That's what the law is about, and yet you have sanctuary cities. You have a president who applauds people who violate our borders and our laws. This is leaving us open to crime, to a national security nightmare. This is crazy. You can't defend a country without a secure border. There is no reason for a military if you don't have secure borders. And by the way, folks, we have 50 border states. Any state that lies on the northern as well as the southern border is a border state. Any state that has an international airport is a border state. Any state that has access to the tens of thousands of meandering American coastline is a border state. So understand that this is about all 50 states. When you have politicians saying, well, we'll secure the Mexican border, they're lying. This is like them telling you that they're going to take that colander that you use to drain pasta and we'll plug one of the holes partially. And once we sort of partially plug one hole, you'll be able to use that colander as a bucket. How's that for an interesting analogy?
That is absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. Just listening to you, you made me forget the next question I was going to ask on my mind. The kids, again, going back to them. I caught a news story late last night that they actually took a whole plane load of these kids and dropped them off in Massachusetts. Janet
yep.
Brewer is hitting the ceiling because of the number of children that have gotten dumped on her. And they take the kids, they put them through a process center, hand them a ticket, and say, we'll see you in 15 days.
And what's the likelihood they're going to show up, and who's going to look for them?
Absolutely no one.
Nobody. They've catch and release, and catch and release was a failure. Roughly 90% of the aliens who were given that notice to appear didn't. In fact, you know what the Border Patrol and ICE agents call that notice to appear? They call it a notice to disappear. It's a game of hide and seek where they hide and nobody seeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who do show up know that they have a family member here who can petition for them. So generally, the only people who show up are the people who know that by showing up, they can get the court to do something beneficial for them.
No, and the answer to this administration is, oh, we've got to get immigration reform. No, we don't. We've got all the laws in the books that we need to enforce immigration.
I would change a couple of the laws in minor ways, but you're right. The issue here is a lack of enforcement. But we saw this with Reagan, though, Annie. Look, Reagan started this disaster on the heels of Jimmy Carter because Doris Meisner was busy at work in both administrations trying to engineer this country into oblivion. Doris Meisner used to tell us that we needed to be customer-oriented. Well, I agreed with her, but you know where I disagreed with Doris? Doris thought that the customers were illegal aliens. I've always believed that the customers of the U.S. government are the citizens of the United States.
Oh, man. And Reagan did make that huge mistake, and as soon as he realized...
It was a mistake. It was calculated.
I wouldn't want to
He knew damn well what he was doing. He never hired a single additional agent. You would have to flunk that wiggle test that we started out talking about earlier to not think that we wound up with millions of illegal aliens, which means they broke the law. What's the solution to people breaking the law, creating incentives or creating deterrence?
Deterrence, absolutely.
Okay,
and
so he knew you had a big population of illegals. All he did was create an incentive. They never hired agents to go after the employers who knowingly hired the illegal aliens, and they never looked at the unintended consequences. If you,
and one of those reasons, let's say that one of the reasons is those people backed Ronald Reagan, gave his campaign a lot of cash, and let's face it, Ronald Reagan, although a good president, he was still a politician. He played the game.
Well, I would argue that he was a lousy president, but that's me. But the point of the matter was he promised deregulating everything, including immigration. His deregulation led to the demise of Trans World Airways and a host of other airlines. Look, we need to get rid of stupid regulation, but you can't have total deregulation. You have anarchy. We've created anarchy in the immigration system, and that's dangerous. You know, you get one opportunity for a first impression. For millions of people around the world, the first laws they encounter are our immigration laws. We have now convinced the entire world that in this country, violations of our borders and violations of our laws will not only be tolerated but rewarded. when he said we're going to go after the people that hire illegal aliens and then did not hire a single additional agent to go after the employers, and we were overwhelmed as it was by illegal immigration, what do you think is going to happen now? If you're unable to lift 20 pounds and I tell you to lift 50 pounds, now where are you going to be?
Nowhere fast. Nowhere fast. What I love about this response from Obama to our influx of immigrants this past week, he sends Joe Biden to South America and say, oh, please tell the public, no, don't send your kids up here. How brilliant is that? Is that Mike?
Yes, no. I'm distracted by it. I have to take care of some personal stuff at the moment. You know, and we're way past what we had anticipated. I'm sorry for cutting you short on all this, Annie and Mike.
Mike, having you here is a breath of fresh air. And just so you know, the last time you were here, you recommended a movie. I forgot what it was. I got it. About a kid in a satellite.
It was. I recommended. Well, the two movies that I would recommend everybody to see is October Sky,
And the other one you should see
is Network. You should also see Network, because that'll tell you what really goes on in the newsrooms of television stations.
No, having you for a half hour has been a great insight, and I'll tell you, I hope one of these days we're going to hopefully we'll make some sort of change, take the oligarchy and throw it right in the river.
Well, we need to unite as Americans. This isn't about right. It's not about left or right. It's about right or wrong. The wealthy are investing billions of dollars and pushing for comprehensive reform, and that's how we're in the mess that we're in now, and we've got to change that equation.
All right, Mike, you've got a show here on BTR as well as
Yes, I do. Friday nights from 7 to 8, the Michael Cutler Hour on the USA Radio Network. And please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org. Front Page Magazine has one of my articles. The Social Contract has my articles up. This is truly about doing what's in the best interest of America and Americans. It has nothing to do with one party or the other. And by the way, when your neighbors disagree with you, have that conversation. You know, we were raised on this idea that we shouldn't be discussing religion or politics. Religion, I agree with that. That's as personal and private as it gets. But politics, folks, it's by keeping us ignorant that the politicians have been able to get what they want, and that's lots of money from lots of people willing to give them what amounts to nothing more than legalized bribes known as campaign contributions. You saw what happened with Dave Brat in that race in Virginia, and really, I think the American people are waking up to what immigration is really about. Any politician who doesn't believe that the immigration laws need to be enforced and all of our borders secured and doesn't stand for American workers needs to be made to find out what the unemployment line looks like. You know, democracy, as I always like to say at the end of my commentaries, is not a spectator sport.
No, it's not. Thank you so much, Mike. And we'll be talking.
Absolutely. Great joining you all, and I hope you all have a wonderful day.
All right.
Mike,
I love
you have a wonderful day. Keep it up. What a great guy.
All right. Woo. Thank you so much.
A wealth of information now at our disposal, of course.
Yep, absolutely. Oh. MikeCutler.net. So take a look at his website. And truly he is a Democrat, but he's also a good friend. And Mike, he's right. We have to open up the dialogue. And that's something I'm not afraid to do. And I constantly tell, I'll have a Democratic friend or a liberal friend, and we'll be talking at a bar, you know, exchanging conversation. And don't get into a fight. Don't allow it to go down to that level. But have a logical, calm, cool conversation. And, you know, each make your point, and if you agree to disagree, fine. But at least each one of you know where you stand. Right?
Well, not just that, Annie. Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. But my point is, in war, September 11th, Pearl Harbor, December 7th, nobody looked at each other and said, you know, I'm not fighting with you or whatever. I mean, we were attacked. This is what's happening, whether it's foreign or domestic, within the United States or outside the borders. As long as we continue to get brainwashed in the sales jobs, we're going to continue to be divided. But when we unite, we see the good things that happen.
Yeah, that's true. And what really gets me about this last episode with these kids coming across the border, they're using the children, again, a prop how many times have we had photo ops with Obama as children as his props? This group is now using children as props. They're putting these kids' lives at risk. And not all of them are innocent. And, folks, I'm telling you, take a good look at that footage of the pictures of these kids in the holding pens. A lot of them have gang tats on them. A lot of them, I'm telling you, are taller than I am, and I'm only 5'3". These are young adults, and I can't even call them innocent children, but there are some innocent children in there. And if we can reunite these innocent children with their families, and then, as Mike was said, do you deport them as a family unit or send them back to the country if their parents are still in that country? You know, it's child abuse, it's child abandonment. And why aren't we looking at it as child abuse and child abandonment? Would we have an American family, Mike, if we saw a mother leave her kid in a stroller on the sidewalk as she went to a store? Would that woman not be arrested for abandoning her child? You know, why are we treating them differently? Why are we treating them? And admit
we know why, Annie.
Uses props.
We know why. Well, we know why, Annie. We know why. I mean, of course, you shouldn't say that, but we know why. I mean, it's never an end.
No, there's never an end. And here, New York State, which I didn't get a chance to ask Mike, has decided they're going to give voting rights, Medicaid, and licenses under a New York bill, a new bill that's being proposed by Gustavo Rivera, a Democratic out of the Bronx. He wants to make these illegal immigrants that are coming over New York State citizens. Now, think about that. What does our Constitution say about the states and citizenship? State can deny the citizenship of another state? So automatically they're going to make them U.S. citizens by making them citizens of the state of New York. Talk about bypassing the system. And we're in for more of this. This is just the beginning. They're saying that, you know, because this DACA has been extended, that there's going to be another wave, and we're going to have wave after wave of these kids coming over the border. It's either going to be mother carrying a child or these kids being unescorted. And the coyotes are getting approximately $1,000 a person? How many millions of dollars was just raised for those coyotes to bring these kids over, to bring these mothers and children over? And we're not stopping it because Obama refuses to deport anyone. He publicly stated a day ago that he's not going to do any deportations. He's not going to enforce the laws. Why aren't we impeaching this man? Mike, tell me, why are we...
We're afraid, Annie. We just don't have politicians, and we don't have the backbone that we once had. It's just they're more concerned about getting reelected than they are about reestablishing a constitutional republic.
Yeah. Now, Eric Cantor, isn't it amazing? This wave happened immediately after Eric Cantor lost his election bid, and Eric Cantor was for immigration reform. This was orchestrated. This whole entire thing was orchestrated. Eric Cantor wanted immigration reform. Boehner was pushing for immigration reform. A Tea Party came in, and Brat won. And Brat says, no, secure our borders. Now we get this wave, this massive exodus of kids being dumped here. And all of a sudden we're supposed to have a change of heart and saying, oh, because of the children, we now have to do immigration reform. If we secured our borders, these children would never have been put at risk.
One of the, incidentally, Cantor fell to a graduate of a college. It's a Christian, conservative Christian college, just 25 miles from my house, and big supporters of Playboy Energy Drink, although not the administration, but the students are. But, Annie, I wanted to kind of make a comment because I've been in and out and obviously busy with my campaign. Can't help but notice the show happens to be 2 hours now. We need to know about 2 hour show.
Well, I'm still waiting to talk to a certain individual who had been on vacation last week, and I'll try to do that during this week, and we'll see where we go. But
what's a vacation?
My whole life is a vacation.
And I want to apologize to the listeners as well as you, Annie. I know I'm becoming less and less reliable, but the Crusade never has a cause. You know, you can't time limit this and that. And I've been spending a lot of time. We have a problem in my county. We are finding homeless veterans, but we have no place to take them. Sometimes we have to take them to our houses or just what I mean, and hopefully we're going to change that with the new millage. But it's really a sad, rewarding experience, but it is to see a side of the world you don't know exists, and it's a mile from your house. And that is people who are 25, 30. They, you know, some of these people, Annie graduated magna cum laude, and here they are on the street. And, you know, it's just a, anyway, I apologize for being just, either I'm very politically involved or I've developed a big drug habit in the past few months. But anyway.
That is commendable what you're doing with the veterans, because people don't realize 22 veterans per day commit suicide. So, you know.
Yeah.
And our government does nothing, the way they treat them at the VA. Listen, we're down to our last 3.5 minutes. Gosh, these 2 hours just went past, you know, just so much. Mike Cutler's always a blast to talk to. Anytime he and I get on the phone together, you know, we're on there for at least half an hour or more. I end up with cauliflower ear. But we'll be back on Friday. I'm hoping to get a confirmation to see if Chuck Woolery is joining us back again on Friday, because we'll be talking Second Amendment rights. So I hope you do join us then, Mike.
Ask me what I'm doing tomorrow.
What are you doing tomorrow?
I am going downtown in Grand Rapids and going to have lunch with Judge Andrew Napolitano.
Ah.
How cool is that? Hopefully we'll get some pictures with some of my candidates, and the Acton Institute is bringing them into Grand Rapids. And they actually moved the lunch from the Acton Institute into a big forum downtown because so many people wanted to see them. But hopefully I'm going to slip them a note that says, get on Southern Sense for at least 15 minutes. Justin Amash is going to be next to me. So if I can get Justin Amash, Raul Labrador, congressman from Idaho, and the judge, boy, we're going to be rocking and rolling for whatever new surprises that are out there for everyone.
We'll see if you can get someone here on Friday, too, then. I want to welcome everyone and thank you for joining us. And we will be back on Friday, so I hope you join us. Same bat time, same bat station. And I'd say good night and God bless. And, Mike, have fun at that luncheon tomorrow.
I will. Good afternoon, everybody.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. American, I've got the heart, American.